are you, Soraya?
All right.
Where are you?
Hey, Ronnie!
Wait. I don't see you guys.
It's audio chat.
Oh, it's audio chat. I thought we were going to see it. Okay, okay.
Oh, wait. Enough. Do you want a quick visual? Is that what you want?
It's okay.
Do you need to see us?
It's okay. No, I did my hair and everything. So.
Ah!
It's okay.
Jeff, how dare you?
Actually, I didn't do my hair, so not I was a little worried. This is better. This is better.
Hi, this is Soraya.
And this is Jeff.
Our podcast is called Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme.
A podcast where the two of us play music that we like and share anecdotes and background about the tunes.
We hope you'll join our conversation. And without further ado, agrubiar.
Let's get groovy. So, Soraya, we have a third voice today.
Oh, man. And what a voice. What a voice. Folks, you are in for a real treat today. I can't, there aren't enough adjectives for me to add into this little short itty bitty intro, but folks, you're in for a treat today because we have the one, the only Ronnie Barnett of the Mops.
Woo! Oh, thanks you guys. I've been tempted. Finally, I get on this thing. I've been trying.
So
you guys even had Pat Thomas on already. For gosh sakes.
Don't blame us if the check didn't go through. It just took us a little while. Thank you so much. But thank you, Ronnie.
Yes. We decided to start from the bottom and we're working our way up.
Thanks for having me. I'll try to do my best and not and remain positive.
Well, today we have you not as a guest but as a co-host, so we definitely would like to someday have you on to talk about your music, but today we're going to talk about some other music. And Soraya came up with an idea for a new series. Soraya, did you want to share what that series is?
Sure. Jeff and I were trying to think about what are some new approaches. And one of the things that we came up with in brainstorming was taking a look at side projects. So, and we're using the term side projects kind of loosely here, because I think for three of the bands, we can definitely say, yeah, there are active side projects while the bands are also still performing as their singular unit. But in the case of the 3 o'clock, while there are some performances currently, we're taking a look at the bands that kind of were offshoots after or before the 3 o'clock formed. So side projects with a little bit of, you know, parallel projects going on.
Yeah. So yeah. I was saying it could be solo side projects. It could be spinoffs, or I called it starters just so I could use the alliteration with the S's, but anything where these band members played in other projects other than the group that we're talking about. So today we're talking about projects that the members of the 3 o'clock did besides the 3 o'clock.
Right.
And so what we decided to do is each one of us to pick two different songs from two different bands and talk a little bit about why we picked those songs.
So, it's good you made that distinction too, that these aren't really side projects. They were actually full projects after the 3 o'clock, right? For the most part.
Absolutely, so. Yeah.
Or before the 3 o'clock, as you
like. Yeah, yeah. One is before, and I think a couple after. Yeah.
See what I did there before 3 o'clock?
Dude.
Got that in there? Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that is
slow today. Forgive me.
All right. So since Ronnie is our guest today, we decided to have Ronnie pick his first song to start us off with. So Ronnie, did you want to tell us what you picked and why you picked it, or...
Yeah. I mean, it kind of starts at the beginning. I think I picked a song by The Quick, which was Danny Bonnaire's band, formed. I think they must have formed in 75 because their one album came out in 76. So, that would kind of be the beginning for any of these 3 o'clock side projects, if you will.
So that's a good place to start for sure.
And The Quick is, like, so important as far as, like, L.A. music. And, you know, if you hear them talk, like, when The Quick formed, like, they were playing, like, barbershops and stuff. Like, you know, before they kind of started sneaking on bills in the clubs, like the Starwood, I mean, they were playing, you know, anywhere they could.
Wow.
Which was not very many places. So.
So you went with The Quick. What song did you decide to go with?
I picked No No Girl, which I could have picked any song off Mondo Deco, but I think, I mean, besides being track one on the album, it's just, it shows all the strengths of The Quick, I think. Melody, performance, singing, arrangement, you know, so No Girl.
If you were bad, you'd be on daddy's knee. Little girl lost who was often ignored. Grew into a teenager frequently bored. Found out the bad things most often feel good. And then tried as many of them as she could. But nobody cares. She tries to be dangerous, but no one's aware. She is still after her lost relation. A classic case of father fixation. Daddy was good. Daddy was just. Daddy was God. In Dad you could trust. So when you were bad, he knew what to do. But now there is no one who cares about you.
Now, that's a great way to get started.
Absolutely. I just want to clarify, too. That's actually track two on the album. I said it was track one. But track one is a Beatles cover, so that's why I always kind of, as good as their version is of that, that's why I kind of consider No No Girl track one. So
it's their first. It's the first original on there, for sure.
It's the first original. Yeah, yeah. So
that's a great track. And that Mondo Deco was a great album. It in the recent reissue sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, finally they got around to doing that. It's great that they still reissued stuff on CD. It, you know, so many people consider CDs dead or whatever, but, you know, I'm so happy to hold Mondo Deco on CD in my hand.
You and us both. Right, Soraya?
Totally, yeah.
All right, Soraya. So what did you come up with?
All right, so continuing the Danny Bonnier Love Fest, I picked a track from another band that Danny was involved with, Choir Invisible. So when we spoke with Danny Bonnier, he mentioned this band, and I had to go back and when I started listening to the tracks, I was really intrigued because it's a very, very different sound, you know. So everyone now has listened to Quick and has that sound, that 70s sound in their head. And then Choir Invisible is like a very 80s sound. It's a real shift. And so Choir Invisible, one LP released on Frontier in 1981. And this is from Side A, and it's track 6. It's called Side to Side. And I have a comment, and I'll wait until we're done.
I've got a few, too.
Okay.
All right. Well, here we go.
Distance from side to side. Leave the commissary to haunt my living room. Oh, why can't I fall asleep? I've waited half the night. Half the night. The situation was unfoldable. For success, a new broom. You're going to want to have your autograph framed alongside your soul. Feeling distraught, forgot what I was taught, left it behind years ago. What I was taught to let it behind. Years of holding forthright, thought that I might leave it out to you. Surprise me with the truth. Surprise me.
All right, you both have stories for this one. Soraya, what's your pick? What did you want to say about it?
Okay, so first of all, I picked this song because Danny's drumming on this song really hooked me in. It was just something like I kept going back and listening to it, and I just liked the drumming on it a lot. And there was something that just I couldn't figure out about this song, and it was regarding John Curry's voice. And I kept going, okay, this sounds definitely early 80s, early new wave. But I was trying to figure out what it was. So I started digging through articles and reviews and things like that. And one guy on Discogs referred to this album as, quote, pure worship. And I'm like, wait, what? That wasn't where I was going, but okay. And I realized what it was. That kind of the driving drums and that little synthy sound and those vocals, it reminded me a lot of very early Simple Minds. Oh. Very early Simple Minds. And so I'm like, oh, okay. More or less I get where the vibe's going on this, but what drew me to the track was Danny. Danny, hands down. But it is this kind of early 80s. It reminded me a lot of that early 80s English new wave. But I like the song. That's it. All right, Ronnie, I'm ready.
Yeah, definitely. No, I haven't heard that album in many years. I have it here somewhere. But I want to say that's got to be the fastest song on the album, because I remember it being very mid-tempo, like very Echo and the Bunnymen. Yeah, you're right. Danny did his drums on that track were great. But this was kind of the era where, like, the original punkers were like kind of like going gothy, like, because I think Choir Invisible was the Flyboys,
right?
If I remember right.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, bands like TSOL were turning into Cathedral of Tears and stuff at the time. So, yeah, everyone was influenced by, and I love that early English gothy stuff too, like The Cure and Echo and the Bunnymen. But yeah, I don't know. I never listened to Choir Invisible too much, but yeah, I always thought they were very derivative of Echo and the Bunnymen. But that was a good track. Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, you found a good one.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you.
See, I do my work.
All right,
Jeff.
Okay, so I'm moving away from Danny now and going.
How dare you?
You know I love Danny. So, yeah. Speaking of Danny, we could have also went with the Weirdos. So when we had Danny on the show, we talked a little bit about Choir Invisible, The Quick, Weirdos, and some of the other stuff that he's.
Did he play on a Weirdos like record or?
He did.
Just fill in. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably that one with a white cover, maybe that was on Bomp.
Yep, exactly.
And, yeah, okay.
And then he moved off, so, yep.
Huh, did he have a Weirdos image? Like, did he wear, you know, the wild outfits with stuff hanging off of him and stuff?
That's a good question.
Like, they would wear, like, jumpsuits with, like, trinkets hanging off them and
right.
Stuff. Yeah.
I would have...
We got to do a deep dive.
I know. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Jeff. Go on.
No, that's fine. Well, all right, so I'm going to Lewis, who we've had on the show the last couple of weeks, and there was a few projects that he was on, which we learned about when we talked to him with Lewis and Clark, Mary's Danish and Battery Acid. There were some funny stories about Neil Diamond that we learned about, but I'm going with a Mary's Danish track. So Mary's Danish put out 3 full-length albums and a mini LP that they put out, Experience, Live in Foxy Lady, and then they, in 1989, they put out There Goes the Wonder Truck, and 91, my favorite of theirs was Circa, but I went with a song from their last record, their 1992 release, American Standard, and the song I went with was Ode to a Life. So I just picked this song because I really like the vibe of the song, and it's pretty dynamic in and of itself. They, after leaving the 3 o'clock, and Lewis being a little bit disappointed that they didn't do more guitar stuff towards the end, when Mary's Danish came around, they really went full force with the guitar work. And most of the songs have distortion on it. They're heavy. But this one is a little bit more dynamic. And so this is Ode to a Life, Mary's Danish, from their last LP, American Standard.
Still too far, my voice is screaming out.
Accordion that Julie Ritter plays in that. So that band had two female lead vocalists, Julie Ritter and Lewis's eventual wife, Gretchen. And I like the way that they work off each other. They sound a little bit of like that 4AD band, the American 4AD band.
Oh, Throwing Muses.
Throwing Muses, yeah. So there's similarities there. And also with that electric guitar, it could be like a little Red Hot Chili Peppers-ish at the beginning. But yeah, that song I really like a lot.
No, that was a nice song. I don't know all their material so well, but when I think of them, I think of the girls singing together, like on Don't Crash the Car Tonight or whatever it was called.
Yes.
So yeah, that was definitely different. That was nice.
So Ronnie, you're up again. We've come full circle. So
already, huh?
So are you going to pick another Danny song or a Lewis song?
I wish, you know... I could talk about Danny all day.
I know.
But no, I picked a. You know, it's about time we talk about Michael, right?
It is.
I picked a song which actually this. It's kind of odd because after the 3 o'clock, Michael joined one of my favorite groups called Game Theory.
Oh, yes.
And they actually. That lineup, all they ever did really was do a West Coast tour, and it kind of fell apart for whatever reason. I'm sure distance had a lot to do with it. And a lot of the songs that they did, that lineup ended up on the first Loud Family album, which was when Scott Miller kind of changed the, basically I considered a name change, you know, because Scott Miller was always the guy in charge of Game Theory. But this is a song I found a live version of. Called Idiot's Son, and on this live version you can hear Michael's harmonies and you can hear what he brought to that lineup. I was lucky enough to see them at a Club Lingerie here, and too bad that lineup didn't really get any further than that tour, because having Michael in the band was really kind of special, as you'll hear here.
So you saw them with Michael playing?
I did.
Wow.
And their drummer, Gil Ray, was having back trouble. So Gil was actually playing keyboards, and they'd gotten Joseph Becker back in the band. So that was the lineup. Yeah, it was a tight little four-piece lineup there, a Game Theory. So,
wow.
Yeah, and somewhere, I used to tape bands. I have a cassette of that show somewhere. So probably didn't sound very good, but I wasn't one of these guys that was like setting up a mic and stuff. I just had a tape recorder, and I would beg, my girlfriend Kim not to talk, you know, because I was recording the show.
That's
so hilarious. Yeah, a lot of my recordings have her talking.
That's hilarious.
So, but yeah, this is Idiot Son by Game Theory, not by the Loud Family.
Okay.
It's too bad that there isn't a studio version with that lineup.
Yeah, no, it really is a shame. But you can hear Michael's harmonies there, though. They're, you know, pure. That's pure Michael. You know.
Those two voices. It's just, oh my gosh.
Yeah, Scott Miller was a true genius. I think. Always thought. You know, too bad he's not around anymore. But I always thought he'd be rediscovered like Big Star was or something, which has happened to a small degree with the, you know, the catalog getting reissued recently. But just a pop genius. I mean, yeah.
I discovered Game Theory from Michael's work. I think one in the 3 o'clock paint box, they had mentioned that Michael was starting to do some production work. And this was when Game Theory was putting out their mini LP or EP Distortion. And I bought that because Michael did the production work on it and bought everything after that. And I don't know if there is a bad Game Theory song. Most of those songs are super complex. There's so much going on in them. They're just fabulous pop guitar songs.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
And we had reached out to Michael recently because his name is listed on some of the Game Theory records, but we didn't know exactly what his participation was. And he told us that he did backup vocals on the song 24 and Real Nighttime from the Real Nighttime album, and also The Real Sheila from Lolita Nation. So that was at least some of the things that he participated in with Game Theory. Nice.
Yeah, I think on Distortion it says like various background vocals or something by Michael.
Right. So great pick.
Wow. Yeah. Excellent.
I think those two were very influential on each other, and that was a good thing. And, you know, Girl with a Guitar, which 3 O'Clock Dead. I mean, that's, I know it's a co-write, but that's a Scott Miller song. You can tell.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Soraya?
Sorry, just give me a minute.
No. I'm putting me in there. We should do a thing on game theory one of these days.
Okay.
We have to.
He said it. It's spoken. It is so.
It's going to happen.
You know, I have to agree with you. I think Scott Miller, for, you know, the fact that he's not around and now people are perhaps, you know, digging back and looking into these tracks, there's just so much there, and him as a musician, just everything. I think there's a lot that still needs to be said. I have to agree with you.
Absolutely. I just a quick story. Yeah, back in 87, when I still lived in Houston, I had talked to a promoter. I was writing then for a local paper, and I talked my friend into booking Game Theory, and she's like, okay, but you're going to have to help me out. So that day, I had to take Scott Miller to the college radio station. I drove him in my car, and I don't think I've been more paranoid to drive in my life, knowing I had the life of, like, a genius in my car, that I was responsible for his life. Like, I'm getting paranoid still thinking about it now. But
wow.
But it worked out, and we're both safe, and he got to the station.
Nice. So.
See, it pays to be Ronnie Barnett's friend. You know? You get to meet fun people.
Thank you. I'm going to quote you.
Please do. Soraya Amdari. All right, Jeff. So, for people listening, it's going to seem like I was copying off of Ronnie's paper, but I'm following in his footsteps. You know, I guess the whole adage about great minds thinking alike, include myself in there. But anyway, so I picked a project headed by Michael Curcio, and it's Jupiter Affect. So this comes from the Restoration of Culture after Genghis Khan, released in 2003. And the track that I picked is Genghis Khan Blues Theme, which is from Side A, and it's track 2. So the reason why I picked this is because this song blows my mind every time I play it. And just out of curiosity, I, you know, looked into my library, my digital library, and it's one of the songs that I play the most.
Wow.
It's in my top 5. And there's everything in this song. I mean, everything. It's one of these songs that once you hear it, it just kind of, it sticks with you. And it's because you have hard rock, you have these really cool solos in the middle of the song, this great, catchy chorus. There's just a little bit of everything here, and I can't love this song enough. So here you go, Genghis Khan Blues Theme.
Never more, lives are born. On our way.
Yep.
I can see why that one would be in your top five of play songs. I can just imagine Soraya driving down the freeway with that song blaring.
What's funny is, so I commute a lot to work, and when music's playing, like, I'll just get lost. And I have noticed many, many times when this song is playing, like, I'm well over the speed limit, and then I look in the rearview mirror and I see some cop nearby, and I go, "Oops, slow down, bring it down." Like, it's a driving beat, and you know, like, I just get caught up in it, and that solo in the middle is just it's like a, you know, Michael likes to use this term, like, it's a freak out. It is just everybody playing everything at every speed. It's just drums, guitar, bass, everything. Boom, throw it all in there. It's just it's this very frenetic pace, and I just like this song a lot.
Nice.
Yeah, that band had two guitar players, and Michael utilized their talents, that's for sure.
100%, yeah.
All right.
Great players. Hopefully those guys will get, they need to be celebrated like we celebrate Permanent Green Light now without the issue. You know, like, it'd be great to have a compilation like that of Jupiter Effect, for sure.
Jeff and I are definitely trying. We're trying. And I just got to say, Chris Brockner is just insane on this song. I mean, he's insane on pretty much any song that he plays, but he is just out of this world. Oh,
he's a secret weapon. Yeah, yeah, I always tell him that.
All right, Jeff.
Yeah, so I got to see Jupiter Effect twice, once at an International Pop Overthrow show, and it was the same date that The Last were playing, so that was a great bill that they had there. Mm-hmm. And then I also saw them in San Diego at a street fair, and they, oh my gosh, they brought it. They really brought the rock to that crowd that were, I think it was an art walk or something, and they were on a stage, and it was amazing. So, All right.
Those aren't the easiest gigs either, playing outside to people that aren't necessarily there to watch a band. So, yeah.
You can manipulate them all you
want. Yeah, believe me. It's not the easiest thing in the world, yeah.
They were into it. All right, so the last song that we have for today is a track that I picked that Michael participated in. And to be honest, the reason why I picked this song is because we have Ronnie on the show, and I wanted Ronnie to tell some stories about the man behind this project that maybe we can ask you after the song, Ronnie, to share some stories. But Tater Tots was a project that Bill Bartel put together, and man, that guy, he seemed like he was not only like a huge music fan, but he paid respect to the bands that he liked in a lot of his projects, especially if you see some of the covers that he put together. Ronnie, you and I were talking about some of the single covers that he put together when you were in the band with White Flag. Some of those covers are so cool.
And that's pre-Photoshop. I mean, we can talk about it after the song, but pre-Photoshop too. He did those by hand. Like that Jefferson Airplane takeoff thing. Like, he somehow cut out the hair and anyway.
That's crazy. That's so cool. So Tater Tots was a project that he put together, and he pulled in all kinds of artists, including Jeff and Stephen McDonald from Red Cross, and then Melanie from your band, Ronnie the Muffs. She worked on it, and then so Michael played on one of the songs. They put out two full-length albums, the first one being called Alien Sleet Stacks from Brazil, Unfinished Music Volume 3, which is a nod to John Lennon. And then the song I picked is from Mono Stereo, Sergeant Shonan's Exploding Plastic Eastman Band Request. And then they also had a live CD, Tater Comes Alive, Tot Live, If You Want It. So they're all great titles with paying homage to other bands. So the song that I picked is a long one. It's Who Has Seen the Wind? Bohemian Rhapsody. So they used the lyrics from the John Lennon Yoko Ono song from the Wedding album on top of the music for Bohemian Rhapsody. So it's crazy. So on this song, backing vocals by Gwen Kelly, that is how she's listed on here from the Pandoras. That Bill is listed as Pat Fear, which he went by on some of his projects.
That was his rock. That was his professional name.
So he's listed as backing vocals and guitar, and Michael plays bass and vocals on this song. Drums by Dave Landry, who played with White Flag. And interestingly enough, the guitar, lead vocals, and piano on this song is by Pat Smear, who played in the Germs, right? Red Hot Chili Peppers, toured with Nirvana, played in Foo Fighters. Yeah. So he's doing the lead vocals on this song. Lead guitar is listed as Teezy Weezy Butler, and rhythm and blues is a credit to Dave Naz and Ed Yerlich. So listen to this one. It's a long one, but it's interesting what they did with this. So this is Who Has Seen the Wind, Bohemian Rhapsody by Tater Tots. And we'll share some stories afterwards.
Who has seen the wind? Neither you nor I. But when the trees bow down their heads, the wind is past.
Seen. Who has seen the wind?
So I don't know if that's exactly a cover or not, but it's trippy.
Yeah, I think it's a cover. Yeah.
My tie-in was Michael playing bass and vocals on the song, but what I really wanted to ask was, Ronnie, if you would mind sharing some stories about Bill.
Of course. Where do I start? That Bill needs a documentary, really, about him. Bill was a guy from Moreno Valley who, he liked nothing more than to kind of screw around with people. So, like, when White Flag started, well, actually, White Flag came out of his original band called Test Pattern. And you can see famous Test Pattern scenes are in the Decline of Western Civilization, the punk one. Bill is wearing a bright orange shirt. You can see him in the front of the crowd during where they film like the Germs and the Black Flag sequences.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Bill's up front. Bill's the guy that jumps on stage, writes on Darby. And he's trying to write Test Pattern, and he ended up writing Test Pat, which all these people think is some significance about Pat Smear, right? Like, but no, Bill was just trying to write Test Pattern on his arm. Bill, this kind of sums up Bill. So when they made the Germs TV movie, that I don't even know if it was on TV. It was like a TV movie. Remember the one with the kind of biopic about Darby? Anyway, Bill still had the orange shirt. And so when they recreated the Decline scenes, Bill had the extra wear his orange shirt from the original Decline.
Wow.
Which is amazing. Bill was a big Kiss fan. When Bill was a kid and Kiss was playing their first show with Eric Carr at the Palladium in New York, Bill was still in high school, told his parents he could spend the night at a friend's, and flew to New York and saw Kiss.
Wow.
Yeah. Bill went to Kiss on the Fridays, got into the sound check, and talked the sound man to give him a cassette of the sound check.
Get it.
So, yes, there's tons of stories like that about Bill. Bill's band, Test Pattern, was covering Twisted Sister before they had a record out. Bill knew and had tapes of them. And, you know, Bill hung around with early Iron Maiden. Bill named their live album Maiden Japan. Bill named that. They said, we're going to do a live record. And Bill's like, why don't you call it Maiden Japan?
No way. There you go.
Yeah, so Bill, there's just tons of stories about Bill. And then, yeah, hit the musical thing. Like, White Flag would play on bills with hardcore bands. And, you know, Bill had a mustache and wore striped pants and played a flying V and, you know, would do a Twisted Sister song, you know. So the hardcore fans, you know, were baffled by them. I mean, that's just Bill. He liked to mess with people. And yeah, Tater Tots, that's pure Bill. Just getting like Jimmy McNichol paired up with Jeff and Steve and, you know, Sherry Curry to do a song.
That's right. Yeah. Know.
All sorts of things like that. Bill, you know, Bill got Dot Wiggin from The Shags to write a couple of lines just so Bill could have a songwriting credit with her.
Oh, my gosh. So. That is cool. That is so cool. Yeah.
So he was an interesting guy, and I miss him terribly. Yeah, he was a really good friend of mine. And, yeah, well, there were times where he drove me nuts. But, you know. Also, I just wish I could, still talk to him. It's very sad.
Wow. So you participated with some of the White Flag projects, and some of those are so cool.
Yeah, Bill roped me and Kim into this is pure Bill. He roped us into being into White Flag, and we agreed to do like a show or two. And then Kim kind of dropped off, but I continued to do a few shows. And he got us in the studio one night in Fontana, in a studio in Fontana.
Oh, wow.
And got me and Kim to record on like 10 songs, which he like doled out over like many 7 inches and records, like over the next 2 years. Oh. So,
so that was
all that stuff was from one night.
No way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so, I was under the impression that you kept going back into the studio to record.
No, that's Bill. You know, Bill just kept, you know, the stuff coming out, and he would try to get us to do more. But yeah, it was, you know, and, yeah, in the band, we wore these matching, like, blue coats, which Kim hated. Kim would take it off after the first song. And I remember we played a show at Al's Bar, and Kim actually hid the coats. And we I'm still mad at her about that. Like, we lost the coats.
Oh.
Because I love that. You can see us on the back of one of the 7-inches wearing the blue coats. But yeah, Bill was one of a kind.
Wow.
There's a great photo. One of my favorite photos of Bill is when the band Flag formed, which was all the members of Black Flag, basically, besides Greg Ginn. This is like a few years ago.
Right.
And, their first show was in Redondo Beach, somewhere where like the first Black Flag show was. And there's a picture of Bill on his knees before they came out, adding songs to their set list.
Oh, I love that. So that is so cool.
That sums up Bill Bartel.
Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you for sharing those stories.
Yeah.
Those
sure. I could keep going. He's there's tons of stories about Bill.
Wow.
So I'm glad he picked a Tater Tot song. He'd be very happy.
Awesome. Yeah. There's a lot of fun things on those records.
Also, speaking of Tater Tots, we should mention it's not really a bootleg because I think Bill put it out, but Live Hate at Beetlefest. Do you know that 7-inch, Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened was, at Beetlefest, they used to have the Beatles cover bands competitions. Well, Bill signed up the Tater Tots, which was about 10 people, including Jimmy McNichol on percussion, and they did a Yoko Ono song for 15 minutes. And and it's captured on this record, just the booing and the stuff flying, and they created chaos at that thing and were thrown out immediately. And
I heard there was almost a riot.
Whether that's maybe a bit laid on thick for the legend. But yeah, no, people were mad, apparently. I wasn't there, but people were mad. And yeah, you can imagine.
Yeah, and the bootleg record label that it came out on was called Apple Core, which was interesting.
There you go. Yeah.
So that was cool.
Which shows you, Bill put that out.
Awesome.
Jeff, please tell me you have this.
I don't have that yet. No, I still need to get it.
I need to hear this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably not too expensive.
I need to get that one and the live CD with the two albums I have. So.
Right.
So I put together a little list of some of the side projects, solo projects, some of the stuff afterwards. And the list that I came up with is not extensive, but the projects that Michael worked on we talked about Game Theory, Jupiter Effect, Tater Tots, and of course on other shows we've talked about Permanent Green Light, Rainy Day, Salvation Army. But there was also a project that he did, the Imperial Butt Wizards. So I don't believe there's recorded projects, but there's some fun videos to see online. And then Lewis was part of Lewis and Clark, Mary's Danish, and Battery Acid. And then he also did a little bit of work with Sky Saxon and played on that one song with Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
And then Danny, of course, from Choir Invisible, The Quick, the songs that you picked, and we mentioned The Weirdos. And then later, Jason Faulkner, who played on Vermillion. Ronnie, we've been talking about it'd be great to have a panel just to talk about that album alone. But Jason, of course...
Yeah, no. I can, if they agree, I can make that happen. Go ahead.
Yeah, we need to do that. I'll be there, front row, for sure.
Mm.
So then Jason, of course, played on a bunch of projects, including Jellyfish, The Grays, TBIs. He's touring with Beck now, played on a few of his albums. And then he played with Community FK out of Los Angeles for a while. So lots of projects that these guys have been involved with. Definitely not an extensive list, but quite a few.
And Jason actually filled in The Quick when they played a couple of songs at Gary Stewart's memorial recently.
Right. That's right. Yeah, I saw some video on that.
Two members of The Quick with extra people, but Jason was one of them. So
that was really cool.
Yeah.
So for this series, we wanted to cover all four bands from the Paisley Underground. We're starting off with the 3 o'clock, but we also wanted to get into side projects and other projects with Rain Parade, Dream Syndicate, and the Bengals. But we wanted Ronnie to pick what the next band that we would be covering on next week. So have you thought about that at all, Ronnie?
I have, yeah. And we're going to have our work cut out for us because it's a band with a lot of other projects. And so we're going to do the Dream Syndicate.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
So we have lots.
Start doing your homework, you
two. Oh my gosh. There's lots of bands that these guys have been involved with. So.
Yeah, lots of pre-Dream Syndicate bands. after James Syndicate bands. You know, Steve Wynn is the hardest working man in show business. I mean, the guy, it's incredible. It really is still.
You know. All right.
Yeah. But we'll talk about that next week.
Yes. Sounds great.
Are you loving this already, Jeff? Because I am.
Yes, absolutely.
It's... Oh my gosh, Ronnie. Yeah, we're just going to keep having you on. So
I hope I'm not talking too much. Just you can tell me. No, to shut up.
Are you kidding? This is exactly what we want. We want to hear all of it. We want to dig inside your brain.
This is fun. This is all I do is talk about music with friends. So this is fun.
This is
so thanks, you guys.
Exactly why we started the podcast. So
totally. All right, Jeff. I don't know. Is there a way to end this? Because this is pretty epic.
Well, we have our sign-off, but we're going to have Ronnie come up with his own sign-off, too.
So. I was going to say, this is where I go away and then you guys talk about me. I know how this podcast works.
All right.
You need your own sign-off, Ronnie.
I got nothing.
Okay, so for Dream...
That's my sign-off.
For Dream Syndicate, your homework is to come up with a sign-off, unless your sign-off is, I got nothing.
I'll come up with something better, thanks.
All right, sounds good.
All right, you too.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Ronnie.
We'll talk soon.
Awesome, right. Bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right, Soraya.
What the what, man? What the what?
How great is Ronnie?
So, first of all, I love Ronnie Barnett. Hey. Just, you know, let's leave off there. But, you know, I love his input. I like his perspective. And, man, this guy is just, he's full of stories.
Mm-hmm.
I want more.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have Ronnie on to discuss the projects that he's been involved with. And hopefully we don't cover all of those before we actually get to his episode. So... Probably the correct way to introduce Ronnie would be to have a show just talking about his stuff and then have him on as the co-host. But we've been able to talk with Ronnie a few times and we've been coming up with all these ideas. So we decided to bring him on as a co-host first and we'll end up having him on to talk about his stuff later. But yeah, I was so glad to have him on talking about the 3 o'clock because Ronnie and I have shared stories about Bill Bartell, and some of those stories are just so great that I wanted to rope him in to share some of those stories that he shared with. And yeah, so Ronnie had given me some 7-inch vinyl singles, and some of the covers are so great, especially with the Jefferson Airplane homage that he was talking about. And he didn't get into it too much on the show, but he was telling me that it was actually hand-cut collages that he was putting a lot of these covers together where he would do homages to bands and they were all hand cut collages. So he would have to find images that had the correct sizes of everything to make them work. Old school collages. So
I love that. That's an artistic mind.
Yeah. I have
100%
the utmost respect for Bill Bartell and what he did with White Flag and what he did with Tater Tots and some of his other projects. And the guy just seems like he was just a huge music fan, as Ronnie is too. So Ronnie's a great guy. So glad that he agreed to join us for this series. And born out of this could be a game theory show.
Which, you know, yes, we need one of those. We need one of those.
Yeah, it's definitely on our list. Speaking of our list, it's growing quite long. So we have a bunch of shows coming up after this series that should be great. We did talk with Joe Nolte and we mentioned getting back with him. So we have that coming up. And
worth reminding people that The Last is going to be playing in Long Beach at Alex's Bar in August.
Yes.
August the 15th, am I right?
I think that's right. And they'll be performing the LA Explosion album in full.
Which, it's the 40th anniversary. No, I think I'm wrong on the date, but I'll find it. But Joe's got stories galore, and, you know, we barely scratched the surface today with Ronnie. And, you know, these are all the stories about Bill Bartell. These are new to me. So, you know, I am intrigued and I want more.
Yes. Yeah.
But wow, crazy.
Yeah. So the last show is Sunday, August 18th. I just looked that one up. So
yeah. And it's a day show. So if any of you are in the LA area or thinking about being in the LA area around that time, it's worth it. I mean, first of all, LA Explosion is such a great album. And to have the last, and as he mentioned, special guest, it looks like it's going to be a really special day.
Yeah. I mean, just seeing the last perform, LA Explosion, in and of itself is worth going to. But they also have on the bill the Zeros, which is awesome, right. Alley Cats, and Trotsky Ice Pick. So all four of those bands are worth coming to see.
100%.
Yeah.
So we've got Joe Nolte.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other surprises.
Yes.
And things we're working on. But, considering Luis Gutierrez was our, what, episode 35?
35 and 36, yes.
And we are starting out the next 35 with a bang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
with Ronnie in this series, because, oh my gosh.
And episode 38, he's got us doing homework, looking up tracks from Dream Syndicate side projects. Hey. I started a list, Soraya, and I think my initial list, just throwing stuff up off the top of my head and doing a little bit of research, I came up with almost 50 bands.
Yeah.
And that was just with not going that deep into it, but tons of choices, as you guys both have mentioned. Steve Wynn, the hardest working man from the Paisley Underground. I mean, just his list alone, we have tons of material to pull from, but...
100%. And then, do you know what was just released earlier today was one of the side projects, Baseball Project. Oh. They were asked by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to be the house band now that the Baseball All-Star Game is going to be played in Cleveland. So they're going to be playing some dates out there.
That is super cool. They're,
so for those of you who are in and around Cleveland, you have a really neat opportunity to see Baseball Project. So, whew, dude, how are we going to sift through a list of 50 plus and then find, you know, just two itty bitty songs?
Right.
But, oh my gosh.
We've got our work cut out for us, Soraya.
Thanks. It was a great time.
Thanks, yeah. Ronnie.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Ronnie. Oh my gosh, Jeff, this was a lot of fun today, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed it as much, and more to come
indeed.
So gente, with that being said, arrubiar,
groove on, Paisley people. I've got nothing.
I got nothing.
Play it right, you dope.
Look, we're giving you a million out of 50 million. You
come on, do it. It. Do it. Here, go. Do it.
Come on.
I guess that's as close as we'll ever get to getting Kiss on camera. No, close enough.
Depends how stealth you get with that.